Good morning. Welcome back to the John Frederick Show. Common Sense for the Commonwealth, broadcasting from your nation's capital. We're jettisoning away through Virginia. This is the Commonwealth's only statewide radio news network. I'm your host, John Fredericks. I'm the unequivocal, unadulterated voice of Virginia. We're the adults in the room. Great to have you with us today. Common Sense News Time at 43 minutes past the hour. Joining us now, Michael Pope. He is one of the best news reporters out there on the radio from WMAU Radio. And we had a chance to engage Michael both at the Republican nominating convention on May 18th in Richmond. And then we hooked up with him at the morgue. At the Anish Chopra victory tongue-in-cheek headquarters on Tuesday night. Great to have you with us, Michael.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Now, not a lot of action there, we understand, from our guy, our executive producer, Matthew Shuck, who went out there to Chopra headquarters Tuesday night. Kind of a downer, right?
Well, you know, it's always more exciting to be at the victory party than the loser party. Typically, the way those things work is, you know, once someone has won an election, the room kind of crowds with supporters. And if Chopra had won, there would have been a lot more people there. But it's not like the room was empty. Certainly, I mean, from my perspective as someone who was trying to gather sound for radio, it was very loud. And so I had to go outside at one point to collect better audio.
He's gone. We lost him. You there, Michael?
I am, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay, we had a little blip there. Let's. I tell you. I want to get to the interview you did with Congressman Jerry Connolly.
I was just interested in if you had any thoughts as to the low turnout today. We're expecting like 4% turnout. Why do you think it is that so few voters care enough to go out to the polls to vote in this kind of election?
Probably because so few of you in the press bring any attention to the fact that we're having an election.
Dude, I've been doing this every day for weeks.
Oh, well, the whole world listens to you, Michael. How often does the Washington Post on the front page remind people there's an election on Tuesday, the 11th of June?
I don't know.
Wait, you want an answer?
Yeah, I do want
an answer. My answer is in part critical of the media. The media brings so little attention to it. How can you expect the public to know there's even an election today if it's not, you know, being repeated on radio and television in the press, in the printed press? So I think part of the answer is you.
Did you get that, John Frederick? Right,
I did get that. It's you know, Michael, it's our fault in the press, and I loved you. I'm gonna have Matthew pull this out. I loved your little response when you said, dude, I've been doing this every day for 2 weeks. We've been doing the same thing. The lead up to this, Michael, we talked about the Virginia Democratic primary for two consecutive weeks, 3 hours a day, every day, was on every Facebook we did, every column I did, and that's all we talked about, and they still just about got 4%. So how the Congressman Connolly is going to sit there and blame the two of us and the media is incredible to me. I mean, what was up with that?
Yeah, I kind of felt like, in some ways, it's a little bit overkill. I mean, because I'm kind of personally interested in it, and so I'd probably do it maybe more than I could other kinds of stories. But, you know, he was using the, you know, his standard was how often does it appear on the front page of the Washington Post? And you had this long pause when he asked me that question. I don't know how many times it appeared on the front page of the Washington Post.
They had
a voter guide, and it's not like it wasn't in the Post.
I mean, they were covering it, but look, it's irrelevant anyway because this was not a, you know, District of Columbia or Northern Virginia primary. This was a statewide primary. So if it was on the front page of the Washington Post every day, that would have nothing to do with the other regions of the state where the Post has no penetration whatsoever. I can say that I'm a subscriber to the Virginian Pilot, and it was in there every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere, every single day.
If you look, if you read the statewide media in Virginia, certainly there has been a huge amount of press about this election. So I'm, you know, maybe it's true that it hasn't been on the front page of the Washington Post, but that's not like it. That doesn't mean it hasn't been reported on rather extensively.
I mean,
in terms of the turnout, you know, the turnout was around 3%, and that's kind of what the expectations were. You know, I always talk to elections officials in advance of elections,
right,
to try to get a sense of what the expected turnout is going to be. And that's kind of in line with what they were expecting. And they, you know, my understanding from speaking to a couple of them is they were basing that expectation on the 2001 primary, which had kind of similar circumstances. You know, I mean, we're talking about an election in June. People aren't really thinking about politics. Most people, I guess, you and I are thinking about it, but and maybe Congressman Connolly is sometimes thinking about it. But, you know, it's June. People are thinking about weddings and vacations, and they're not really focused on this. Also, there was no race at the top of the ticket. That kind of depresses turnout a little bit. So, you know, this turnout kind of was in line with what the elections officials were expecting.
Yeah, I think so. Look, at the end of the day, Michael, this is all to do about nothing because it had nothing to do with anything. It was in line with what other turnouts have been. It was 3%. Now, what happens is when you lose, like Chopra, Conley was a Chopra backer, you know, you say, well, if the turnout was bigger, we would have won. When we had a bunch of people at the Ralph Northam headquarters who I predicted was going to win this thing, and nobody was there was complaining about the turnout. And Republicans who were sending press releases saying, oh, there was a dismal turnout, that means there's no enthusiasm. Well, the Republicans held a convention and only had 8,000 people there, so the Democrats had 140,000. I mean, the whole thing is a waste of my time. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. But I want to get
I thought that was interesting, actually. So the comment that you're referring to there is the party chairman said that the low turnout of the Democratic primary sort of indicated a lack of enthusiasm for the party. There was another statement, I don't know if you saw this, by E.W. Jackson that talked about the Democrats essentially wasting taxpayers' money by having a primary that so few people participated in. You know, which I thought was kind of interesting considering the way the Republicans decided to do it, which was having this convention instead.
Well, look, Ralph Northam became the nominee of the Democratic Party of Virginia for lieutenant governor, and he got about 80,000 voters. That's how he became the nominee. He got almost 80,000 people to vote for him. E.W. Jackson became the nominee with 2,300 people. So I mean, it's such a stupid argument that it's not even worth our time, Michael. But I do want to get to E.W. Jackson.
To be fair to Jackson, though, I think his argument was that it was a waste of taxpayers' money to engage in this statewide primary that so few people participated in, whereas there was no taxpayer money spent on the Republican convention in Richmond.
Well, you can take the argument and say, why not? Why have elections at all? Why not just let your party operatives pick the nominees like they did in the old days? I mean, you could take that argument to the end of the third. Look, we have a democracy. We have primaries. 140,000 or so people participated in the primary on Tuesday, where only a total of 8,000 people participated in the ridiculous Republican convention in May that I think is a completely asinine methodology to nominate
candidates. It was fun, though. You have to admit.
It was fun, yes. And I'm going to enjoy going back and covering it again. So for the media, we had a great time, and it was interesting to cover and talk about. But in reality, I just don't think it's a good idea. That's just my
view. That issue of having a primary versus having the party just sort of decide who the candidates are, that question you heard me ask Congressman Connolly about the low turnout, I was asking to basically everybody that I could get on the record on the primary day, and I got actually some responses from Democrats that told me that they would actually prefer to have the party decided rather than have the primary. They felt like they would end up with better candidates that way. So it's not just the people on the Republican side. There were Democrats that also felt like they should have the party decide the nominee.
And, you know, especially if the candidate loses that somebody's backing, then they get upset at the whole process. They want to change the process. You know, the bottom line is, to me, any environment that has the opportunity for the most people to engage and be involved is the best process. Now, that doesn't mean that they have to be engaged or involved, but if you wanted to go out and participate in Tuesday's primary, you would have been able to do that. If you wanted to participate in choosing the Republican nominees, you had to go through a very arduous, convoluted process. And rather than simply show up and say, I'm for candidate A or candidate B. Michael, before we run out of time, I want to get to E.W. Jackson. He had a press conference on Wednesday, basically the first press conference he's had since he became the LG nominee for the GOP. And in that conference, he tried to defend some of the financial foibles he's had in the past. And then somewhere injected into the press conference, which I found to be totally bizarre, he says, yeah, well, when I was a younger guy, I participated in taking drugs. What was that about?
Well, you know, if you speak to people that do crisis management professionally, they'll always tell you to get out ahead of a story and, you know, sort of define it before others have an opportunity to do so. So I think from a strategic point of view, Jackson and his people were trying to essentially get all of this stuff out on the record and give their side of it before you read about it in the newspaper, hear about it on the radio. And so I think that was the thinking behind what they were doing. But, you know, Jackson has this reputation as being a very loquacious guy, right? He is a preacher. This is what he does professionally. So, you know, unfortunately, I wasn't at the press conference. I understand it went on for like 45 minutes,
right,
where he spoke and spoke and spoke about everything from the fights that he got into when he was in high school to the troubles in starting a gospel radio station in Boston. And so this issue of the marijuana use and other substance issues was something that was, you know, probably on his agenda of things to speak about and define himself before others had a chance to define it for him.
What do you think of that strategy?
Well, like I said, you know, the crisis management folks will tell you that it's a good idea to, you know, get out ahead of a story, talk about it before others have an opportunity to. So, you know, this issue of the drugs was only one of many things that came up. He also talked about his financial troubles and the bankruptcy. And, you know, next month, 2 months from now, when there's some sort of story about his, you know, drug use or potential drug use, he can say, well, I've already talked about that. That's old news.
Look, he has his first press conference, Michael, since the first weekend where he was the nominee when they did the fly around. And his first press conference lasts, as you said, 3/4 of an hour. Now, here's the problem as I see it clearly. This press conference, instead of being about jobs, taxes, the Virginia economy, sequestration, how we keep our ships in Norfolk, what's going on with the Northern Virginia economy, how we fix transportation, declining education, charter schools, all the issues that are important and facing Virginians. Here's what we get for 3/4 of an hour. I couldn't manage my money. I claimed bankruptcy. I got all these liens. It's government overreach. Big Brother was out to get me. Yeah, I didn't pay my rent, and yeah, I didn't do this, and yeah, I didn't pay that, and yeah, I didn't pay my taxes, and yeah, I couldn't get enough money, and yeah, I'm broke, and yeah, my wife was mad at me, but it's all the government's fault. And oh, by the way, if it wasn't for the government, I guess I'd be okay because then I wouldn't have had a lien. I'm not quite sure where that reasoning went. And oh, by the way, when I was in high school, I did marijuana and then I did other drugs. And I got to talk about this for 15 minutes because that's going to get out in the Examiner or the Post or something else. So I got to get ahead of that story. And yes, I made all these crazy, bizarre, inane statements about yoga is satanic and gay people are pedophiles and they're psychologically demented. And yeah, I made all these statements, but hey, that was then, this is now, and I've got a new thing now, so I'm not going to deal with that. Do you see the problem here?
Well, it sounds to me like your criticism is that the press conference was short on any kind of policy specifics, right?
My criticism is this guy is a disaster for the Republican Party of Virginia, because instead of talking about the issues that are important to Virginians and that are going to define this gubernatorial race, taxes, jobs, sequestration, education reform, transportation, roads, how we're going to define the Attorney General's office, things that are critical, we get 45 minutes of verbal, nonsensical dribble once again about this guy's background. And it's starting to become tiring to me. It's like, who cares? I want to talk about the big issues. But the problem is, this isn't going away. Right?
Well, it seems to me like Jackson was fully prepared to do kind of a true confessional, you know, and talk about the bankruptcies and the drug use and even the fights that he got into when he was in high school. But it sounds like he wasn't necessarily all that prepared to talk about the policy issues. There's an interesting article in the Gainesville Times by Dan Rome that, quoting here from the lead here, yet when it came to discussing transportation and immigration to the top political issues in Prince William County, Jackson offered little, if any, specific policy proposals. And it goes on to talk about him saying no comment when asked about, you know, specific.
The guy is a walking, talking catastrophe for Republicans. It's why he needs to get off this ticket so that Ken Cuccinelli can be rid of this guy and run for governor of Virginia. This is the John Frederick Show. We'll be right back.